Our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or media, to protect the anonymity of all members present. We hope you hear something which you can take away with you and use. We ask that you eliminate any mention of names in reference to members of Overeaters Anonymous and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. This session is being taped and will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. We request two hatters, that is, members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, speak only of their personal recovery as OA members at OA meetings in order to help OA avoid endorsement of outside enterprises. We're going to open this meeting with the 12 steps.
Hi, I'm Marina, and I am a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Marina. Hi, Marina.
And these are our steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you. Okay, I'm Janine, compulsive overeater.
I'm Janine.
Step 10 is the theme of this meeting, and I'm going to share with you a little bit about how Step 10 has increasingly become more a part of my life. I'm going to start out with the latest realization I had. I had big issues with my husband back in the 90s. It's probably the closest we came to divorce. And I was working with a group, a workbook group at that time, and I finally came to the decision that I needed to make a decision to forgive. And I did forgive, and I prayed that I have the resentments removed, and gradually they went away. So the forgiveness set in. However, self-realization of my part in all of that took a little bit longer. And I just want to announce that last year, the beginning of the year, I recognized that, you know, my husband has very low self-esteem. And my little sarcasms that I think are funny are not really funny to him. They don't help his self-esteem at all. And I'm going to ask God to help me be aware of this and to stop doing that. And if I want to say something, to do a build him up remark instead of a sarcastic see what you did remark. And I'm telling you, I started that last year, and I was amazed the first month how many times I caught myself. And usually before I said it, a couple of times after I said it. But the thing is, step 10, which is sort of realizing what you're doing, was setting in. And even if the words sprang out of my mouth, I immediately began to have that self-realization. There you go again. And I would do my best to change the direction that we were going in, either by saying I'm sorry or saying something nice or doing something. But that was my step 10. And the 12 and 12 of AA talks a lot about the importance of self-realization. And depending what area it's in, sometimes when you're a person who spends a lot of time rationalizing and denying, that can be a long process. I've been around since 1974, and I can attest to the fact that it's a long process. Not that I didn't improve as I went. You know, I did improve as I went. But to really, the more you improve, the more you begin to see. And so that was what happened to me last year. And I will have to say, that he has been sweeter to me in the past 12 months than, you know, ever in our marriage. Considerate of me, all kinds of nice things. So I can see that I'm already, like service, you get back what you give. I'm already getting back. In fact, a friend called me and was talking to me about the fact that she had to skip a meeting on Thursday because her husband was having a fit. She was gone so much and going to be gone for this whole convention. And he heard my responses, and he said to me, "Aren't you glad you don't have to cope with that?" And I didn't say, "Well, I used to, you know." I just said, "You know, I am very grateful. That phone call made me very, very grateful on how supportive you are." So it is amazing how things change when we're willing to look at ourselves. And the step 10, I personally, we grew up with these books when I first came around. A lot of wisdom in the OA 12 and 12. And I use it a lot. But I read this morning the whole step 10 in both chapters, and I thought, oh gosh, I love AA step 10. And one of the things they say in the beginning, "For the wise have always known that no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit, until she is willing to admit and accept what he finds, and until he patiently and persistently tries to correct what is wrong." And what's neat about this is I don't put myself down for not knowing that all those years that I was in this habit. I mean, it wasn't like I did it daily, you know. It was usually when we were around other people that I did it, which that's another whole thing, you know. It usually wasn't so much in private. It was doubly embarrassing when you do that to a person in front of others. But what I was thrilled about was that after all these years in program, I know why I'm sticking around. Self-realization opens itself up and gives you gifts constantly. And if it takes you, you know, 40 years to get there, well, that's just what it takes. It was buried out of a lot of onion rings, you know, and you just can't get there so easy. And the next thing they talked about in this AA 12 and 12 was an emotional hangover. Well, boy, I was suffering from then when I came in. Now, I learned very earlier on how to deal with emotional hangovers. And it says here, "The direct result of yesterday's and sometimes today's excesses of negative emotions like anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. If we would live serenely today and tomorrow, we certainly need to eliminate these hangovers." And I have learned and been practicing for a long time what they call the spot check, 10-step spot check inventory. I notice when I'm disturbed. I noticed last night that I was very disturbed because I couldn't find those song sheets, and I was doing what I could to turn it over to God and to, you know, let go of it and not ruin the grand opening because I couldn't find these song sheets for our person who was opening the convention. But so I recognized the disturbance immediately in me. I still fretted over it until one of our hotel liaison miraculously found them 5 minutes before we were due to start. So what that teaches me is all my fretting and worrying about that was really useless energy spent. You know, here at all, higher power hung in there, and my friend found them, and we had them, and it went on, you know. But I do a lot of spot check inventories. I'm very good today at recognizing when I am disturbed, whether it's fear that I'm going to hurt somebody, fear that things aren't going to work out, fear that my friend has been in an accident because she's never late and she was suddenly late. And so all those kind of fears come in there. But the nice part is I see them today and I recognize them. I don't have to do a 10th step at the end of the day for those kind of situations. I recognize it. And I say, I'm feeling unmanageable. I believe I can be restored to sanity. God, this is up to you. You know, I'm giving this situation over to you. And I take those first three steps on whatever emotional hangover I'm having, whether I'm angry at my husband or angry at one of my children. Right now, we're going through a lot of chaos with my oldest son, who's my only son that lives near me. And, you know, I feel so sad for my husband because he doesn't have a 12-step program except the one that I bring into the home. And he is a lot more concerned and stressed about this than I am. Not because I'm not concerned about my son and my senior in high school granddaughter. I am concerned. But I remember constantly that, look, these are God's children too. You can turn this over to the higher power. Do what you can do, as loving as you can do it, and then turn it over to God to fix. So that's the way I've been handling that. And that's been going on about the last 2 weeks, I guess. But we think maybe she's coming to stay with us. And she was supposed to come Thursday night, didn't come. Supposed to come Friday night and didn't come. Now she may be there over the weekend. So I've kind of talked to my husband about this and said, you know, if you need me, call. Of course, I probably wouldn't hear my phone if he would call. But anyway, you know, just make her feel welcome and loved. But we don't have to, like, she was trying to get a credit card. Well, we're not signing for a credit card, you know. But that doesn't mean I can't be loving and do what I can do. And there's lots of things I can do. And what's nice is when she gets too stressed out because of her problems between her mother and father, who are divorced, she will call Grandma, and Grandma will talk to her, and I do my best to take a balanced view in those phone calls, and I remind myself that's all I can do. I can't fix her. She's got a long life ahead of her, and she will probably, you know, make it fine, but I can't take it all on my shoulders, especially not when I've got a convention approaching. Couldn't afford that, you know. So these are the kind of emotional hangovers that I used to get into. And one of the things I still remember years ago, and this was my other A before OA, I was trying to tell my little son, don't be worried, you know, everything's going to be okay. If Daddy gets home and is kind of crazy around here, we're going to leave. Don't be worried. And he said, you ought to tell your face. So my emotional hangover was written all over my face, even though I was trying to say the right things. Well, today I think when I say these things, my face says it too. I'm much more loving inside, you know, and I'm not just putting the words out there because I know they mean something. And there too, it was okay. I was trying to work my program to the best of my ability. I just wasn't able to do that spot check and inventory and recognize that my face was saying something that my words weren't saying. So let me just do a little reference here. I had a few things written down. Oh, and the other, of course, is the end of the day. And that's what you hear a lot about, the end of the day inventory. And I try to do that. But to tell you the truth, for me at this stage, maybe after all those years, this spot check inventory is much more valuable to me. But in years past, doing an inventory at the end of the day. But what I read in the books about that was don't forget when you're doing your spot check inventory at the end of the day to do a balanced one. Put down what went right. Put down what you liked about your day, and then write about your emotional hangovers from that day, you know? But get it balanced. The day can't possibly have been all that bad, and I thought that was an important thing about the end of the day inventory that we do. And again in these books, it talks about our ability to self-appraise ourselves is one of the keys to have an accurate self-appraisal. I mean, we've always had the ability to self-appraise ourselves, but sometimes it wasn't quite on track, you know. We thought we were less responsible. We thought we were, you know, nice, and it was all their fault, and I did a lot of that. I mean, the worst problem for me is the self-righteous anger. When you get into it with someone and you know they were wrong, they were absolutely wrong, and you deserve this feeling, this emotional hangover. You know, this resentment, this anger, and you're entitled to it. That's the hardest kind to get rid of. That is really, and that was what led me into relapse in the 90s, was I had a horrible situation that I could tell all of you about, I won't bother you with, but all of you would agree that I was wronged and I deserved to be angry about this, you know, but I didn't deserve to be angry. You know, the book tells us again and again that resentment and anger are two of the biggest dangers to our abstinence and our sanity with food. And we don't get into forgiveness and letting go of this emotional thing that's going on inside of us because they deserve it. We get into that step, into the step, because we deserve it. We deserve not to live with these things that are so dangerous to our recovery and so dangerous to our abstinence. So I have really, really made some wonderful progress on emotional hangovers, and I feel real good about that today. I probably have something to learn tomorrow, but today that's kind of a strong point. This little being sarcastic and inconsiderate of, and I don't only do that to my husband, I'm sure. If I start looking at when I do that to other people, making these jokes that I think are funny and hurting their feelings, you know, then that'll be another level of self-awareness that I'll come to. And I'm really willing to have that today. The other thing, and I just want to go to page, got a couple of readings here, page 92 in the 12 and 12. Oh, I'm on the wrong page. No wonder I can't find it. Sorry about that. In every situation, we need self-restraint, honest analysis of what is involved, a willingness to admit when the fault is ours, and an equal willingness to forgive when the fault is elsewhere. Our first objective will be the development of self-restraint. And I don't think I understood that until the past few years, that I needed to develop this, because I was always pretty restrained. You know, I rarely did something that was so embarrassing I had to apologize for it. You know, I could be, no matter what was going on, kind of in control of myself to the point of where I didn't do crazy things, although I always pictured myself doing crazy things. I was fearful of doing crazy things, you know, like I could see me walking into the bar and dumping over the bar stools, and I could see me going to a meeting, even a committee in OA, and jumping up on the table and slamming things down. I could picture that there was a part of me that wanted to do that, you know, but I always had enough self-restraint not to do it. But what I didn't understand was getting myself into a place where these things didn't bother me that much, you know, and that's the key to the program. You know, it's not just the self-restraint of keeping yourself from doing embarrassing things. It's also the self-restraint of keeping yourself in a loving mood no matter what's going on around you. And that's why I love conventions so much, because at conventions I never feel more loving. There's something about all of you and the hugs I get and the words you say to me. I never get into a more loving spirit. And doing without a convention last year was so difficult that that's why I got willing to get involved this year. I couldn't do without my booster shot one more year. Had to have it here. But it's just such a wonderful thing to come to something like this and indulge yourself as much as you can. You know, you can't always do the whole thing, but give yourself as much of a gift as you can. The more you can give yourself, the better you'll walk away here with. In the OA 12 and 12, it says, now we need to be stubborn about working our program. You know, that's a neat thing, because I always knew I was a stubborn person. But it's nice to be stubborn about working our program and stubborn about wanting the things for OA as well as for ourselves that are good for us. Even during those times when we feel as though it isn't working or when we aren't recovering quickly enough, stubbornness turns to such good use. It becomes perseverance as we continue day after day to apply to our lives the same concepts we learned in the earlier steps. So I think that stubbornness, you know, I always thought of that as a negative thing, but really when it comes to applying this program in your life, stubbornness is such a gift, so value it. The purpose of step 10 is to identify and remove from our path today's stumbling blocks, those manifestations of pride, fear, anger, self-pity, greed, and other emotions which are bringing pain into our lives and keeping us from growing today. And there's a lot of things that bring pain into our lives. And it doesn't mean we act like they didn't happen. It just means we use a spiritual approach to get through the pain rather than feeling sorry for ourselves, which is devastating. You know, if I feel sorry for myself, it solves nothing. It just adds an additional layer onto the pain. And I'm going to kind of wind up with reviewing our recent behavior, keeping our higher power in charge of our lives, asking for guidance, and promptly admitting our errors becomes a sane and satisfying way of life, far better than nursing our fears or building a fresh set of resentments to harbor. More gifts are in store for us as we continue working the program and experiencing the miracle of permanent recovery one day at a time. So I'm so glad that I'm in recovery with you all here today, and I really believe that Step 10 today is playing a very important role in staying balanced and dealing with life. Am I finished? I can't see you when you put the sign up. Oh, okay, I got 1 minute. So I hope all of you take home from this convention what I know I will take, and that's an inner peace and happiness that I have this and that I'm not leaving just because I've been around for so long. You know, my mother's 99, so I'm only 77, so I might be around. And she's still getting around pretty good, pretty good. In fact, after I had my nails done last week, she wanted her nails done. So she's had worse nails than me all these years. And she went and she felt so good about her manicure. They did the same kind of thing to her. And it was very special, and special for me to share that with her. So I think she's easily going to make it to 100 in November. And I'm setting my goal at 100 or above. I'll tell you, my dad set his goal at 90, and that's when he died. So set your goals higher. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're now open for shares. Stick to the topic of the meeting, step 10, and take this little tape recorder and share with us. Who wants it?
Okay. I'm Judy, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Judy.
I really enjoyed your talk and your sense of humor and, you know, putting things kind of in perspective and really practical things, so I thank you very much.
Thank you, Judy.
Anybody else?
Thank you, Judy. I'm not quite ready.
You're not ready. You're ready.
Oh. Hi, I'm Mary Bell. I'm a carb addict.
Hi, Mary Bell.
Thank you, Janine. I learned a long time ago, step 10. This is mostly from Joe and Charlie's big book study tapes. Step 10 is step 4 and step 5, step 6 and step 7, and 8 and 9 if needed. And that is step 10. So, and I can easily do a written 10th step based on my way of doing a 4-step out of the big book. And if I'm willing to write, then I'm much more willing to get to the bottom of things instead of saying, oh, it wasn't that way really, you know. Or, it was all your fault. My OA sponsor, who was first my Al-Anon sponsor, said, I always had the long bony finger pointing out at you and you and you. And I've been in recovery for 40 years, and I've only recently been able to see the three pointing back at me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Clara. Hi, I'm Clara, compulsive eater, exercise bulimic. Oh, Janine, thank you so much for step 10. The steps are in order for a reason, but they'll work even if you go a little bit astray. This was the first action step I was willing to take. I took it knowing that it would ruin my life. If I began to admit that I was wrong, then I would lose in every situation because I was wrong. There was a family belief that if you're wrong, you're wrong, and there's no fixing it. You're just in a horrible way if you're wrong. And I began to admit when I was wrong. And strangely, it improved my relationships. People weren't fooled when I pretended to be right. How stupid did I think people were? And so admitting when I was wrong was this life-changing action. It was a long time before I was ready to start a step four. But just, you know, learning to do a haphazard step 10 and then admitting when I'm wrong was a life-changing event. I also love the discussion of our step in the AA 12 and 12 and the OA 12 and 12. And this persistence that it talks about in the OA book. Yeah, I've been around since 1984. I'm here because this works better than the alternative. So I'm persisting in OA, and I'm going to be persisting in trying to work the principles to the best of my ability. I'm not going to be perfect. Nobody is. But I will wager that I'm going to be better off than if I had left program. Thank you. Would like to share.
Be careful, striking.
Thank you. Hi, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Yes.
And I like to, what Jenny was sharing. I guess I call it impulse control. And sometimes I'm actually ashamed of it, is the thing. I mean, I guess I fantasize about going off on people, and that's probably unhealthy, but the thing is, I can blame myself for two opposite things at once. I mean, that's just the miracle of being a compulsive person, but I think what was just said, just to show you how compulsive I was, I heard the thing that was just said about you point a finger, three are pointing back at you. Well, I practiced doing this, I mean. But anyway, it's just good to be here. I got a lot of work to do. I hope I do it someday. And as sorry as I feel for myself, I sure am better off for having been here, and I guess I'll be here until I can't. So thank you all.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Paula, compulsive overeater.
Paula.
At the end of my day, my sponsor has me do a little 10-step, and it's called AEIOU. And A is my abstinence, what I ate that day, and sometimes what I'm going to eat tomorrow, too, if I'm struggling. E, exercise. And I is the things that I did for myself that day. I used to, all these fluffy things because I love to do great things for myself. But, you know, now it's like going to an OA meeting. That's what I do for myself. O is something that I've done for other people. And I listened to somebody at a meeting once, and he said, my sponsor just said, say yes or no, because he didn't want a long list of all the wonderful things that I did. And it kind of made me think. And so, yeah, I do sometimes want to write all these, I'm so wonderful. And so lately I've been just writing yes or no. And I it causes me to think. And then U is extremely important. That's my uncovered things for the day, the uncovered feelings. I love what you said, Janine, and about what is it, the emotional hangover. That's going to really make me think. And I've really struggled with a resentment, and I didn't realize, I thought I was over it, and I heard myself the other day just going on and on with a friend about it. And something outside of me was sick of hearing my own voice telling that same dumb story. And I'm like, you know what? That's an emotional hangover. I'm like, I can't even stand it myself. What are my friends thinking of me going on and on about this resentment when I can't even stand it? So those are the kind of things that it's sort of like a bell. It rings real fast at the beginning and then it'll hit again before it will stop ringing. So anyway, I thought I'd share that with you because that's what my sponsor has had me done. And I do it actually most nights. I email it to her. So thank you.
Thank you. We're looking for a hand up. We'll walk the microphone over to you.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Looking at all my friends, trying to steer them into taking it. They wanted me to be control issues last night.
I'm Meg. I'm a food and sugar addict.
Hi. Hi.
And yeah, and I'm grateful for step 10 because it really stops me in my tracks when I go down the road of ongoing resentment or ongoing self-righteousness and those types of things. And I know part of what I was growing up with was I was always wrong. And so when I was, you know, new into program, it's like, well, now I have to really focus on what's going wrong. And again, that's being, you know, that inferiority complex, you know. And then how I was such a good martyr out of the deal and a victim. Oh, poor me. Look at what I've put up with. And my recovery self now says, oh, seriously, buck up, sister. And then the other side is when I get so self-righteous, and I mean, I look at how I've been. And so I look at things, you know, I do spot checks throughout the day, because when all of a sudden I walk away from, let's say, an interaction or something I did, and I feel that, ooh, it's like, oh, I know I got to stop. And it's been something as simple as I was at a department store, or discount store, I should say, and I had returned something, and it was for less than what I paid for it, but I didn't have a receipt, and I was in her face. And I'm driving away and just feeling whatever, and all of a sudden, thank God, goddess, whatever, you know, this, like, thing came down and said, really? So I turned that car around and drove back and waited in line for some time, came up to her, and she just looked at me like, yeah, bring it on, sister. And I apologized to her. And she does what, at least, you know, Minnesota nice, Midwest. Oh, no, that's okay. And I said, please excuse me, but that's bullshit. I said, I was so inappropriate. You did not deserve my anger, my frustration, or whatever. You were doing your job. You were very professional. And I really called out all of the things that she did well and called out all of my things that I did wrong. And I just said, I'm sorry. I hope I did not ruin your day. And in a way that she wasn't going to then take care of me, because I'm so good at that too. That's my addict. And I just said, I wish you, you know, a beautiful rest of your day. And please know that I'm going to change how I do things going forward as a result of this. And thank you for listening to me when you did not have to. So that's the beauty of step 10, is when I can stop in my tracks and say, really? Really? So thank you.
Thank you.
Does that pass?
You can pass it to your right. Somebody had their hand.
All right.
Can we cross talk? No.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, I don't know where it worked.
Okay, I'm Carla. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Carla.
And I was so tired, I didn't even really want to come, but I'm so glad I came. And something that was just said earlier, well, you're talking about emotional baggage, and I'm so grateful for light bulbs or higher power or whatever, because something just hit me. That I have been replaying the same story over and over. Poor me, this certain person in my life is not nice to me, and I just resent her, and I've been working so hard on getting over that, and I need to just quit talking about it. And I just need to forgive her and go on, and wow. Anyway, I better shut up.
Wait. This one.
Okay.
It's left. I left.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
Right. Come on. Yeah, I can.
Sorry.
That's okay. I can do that. Janine and I have been friends. Oh, my name is Nikki, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Janine and I have been friends since fifth grade. And yeah, so now you know how old I am. She's a little bit older than I am, though. Anyway, she was the person who told me about OA, which I immediately dismissed because I didn't think I needed anything like that. But I told her, I said, I can't get out on Monday evenings, you know, and go to a meeting, because there was only one meeting then. And she starts a meeting within walking distance of my home. We have, during that time, we've gone through, we've had fun, we've had sadness, we've had tears. But I must say that you have grown immensely in your humor. So that makes me a good humor sponsor, I guess. My first experience with apologizing when I was wrong was when I was working in a doctor's office, and his wife called, and she's asking me all of these things and about something. I don't even remember anymore what it was. And she said, and I apologized. I said, I had, you know, I did that wrong. And she said, I'm surprised. And I was stunned that she was surprised. And she said, you admitted you were wrong. And I said, yeah, because I was. And that's when I realized that I had learned about step 10. And I do it now. And I'm grateful for being here. My husband's with a sitter, my son, because he had a stroke. And I'm only able to be here for a couple of hours, but I'm grateful to be able to be here. And this was wonderful. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. So glad you're here.
So am I. Who back here wants to talk? Hey, come on.
Hi, I'm Beth. I'm a compulsive overeater. What I've discovered through some years of apologizing is that lots of times something I thought I did to hurt someone and that I would stew over in the old days for, you know, days, weeks, months, years, what I've discovered is lots of times something I thought I hurt them with just rolled off their back. And so they were not stewing and ruminating over it, whatever that word is. I was the one, and if I had apologized or thought of it sooner in many of the past cases, I wouldn't have spent all my time and energy worrying about something that didn't bother the other person at all. It's a lesson I learned a while back. Thank you.
Amen.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Who else?
Hi, I'm Carol. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Carol.
When I love step 10 because whatever the stuff is we call the wreckage of our past can be really short, like that past can only be 24 hours maybe, or 3 hours or 14 minutes. But when I first came into program, this admitted when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And I was in two schools of thought at that time, which I found a lot of people are. I was either never wrong or was wrong all the time, often both at the same time. And so the idea that I was going to have to admit I was wrong made me extremely uncomfortable, because if I had to admit I was wrong, that meant I didn't know everything, and that set the dominoes rolling. Like, all of my expertise and this big person who I thought I'd developed, who was wonderful, I would be exposing myself by admitting I was wrong. And that hasn't proved to be true. It was never true, but I've become almost completely comfortable with doing that. I will say it's helpful to me. It says when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. And we have a slogan, awareness, acceptance, and action. And I used to do awareness and action without the acceptance step for about 60 years. And the reason for that was I didn't like things to linger, because unfinished or incomplete things or things in flux made me really uneasy. So if I became aware of something, I took action immediately, and the action was to put in the fix, to fix it, to make it go away. That skipped the acceptance step, and it skipped any kind of serenity in acceptance. And so what I found is really helpful, and I still do this, but not as much as I used to have to, is I don't promptly admit anything until I run it by my sponsor. I talk to a person who's sane before I launch. And I remember once saying to I'll just say it was my therapist, and I had had words with my adult son. And I said, I don't owe an amends, do I? To her, which is a great way to ask a question. And she said, as a matter of fact, you do. And I went, oh, no, da-da-da-da, you know, and I was laying out the whole defense. And she said, no, it isn't what you said, and it isn't what you did. Is that you came to the conversation with expectations. You had expectations that you know could not be met, and yet you arrived with them anyway, and when they weren't met, you launched. And so you need to make amends for showing up with expectations that were unfair. My time's up. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol.
Who?
Well, I'll make a couple of announcements so that nobody's raising their hand. We got room for another share, though, if you want to avoid the announcements.
Just wanted to remind everybody that the speaker will be speaking after the banquet. Everybody is welcome in that meeting. It's at 7 o'clock. The banquet is at 6. And then we're going to follow it by our live auction and a song from Beth and a seventh tradition. Somebody told me, you better tell them about that seventh tradition at the banquet, because people come with no money. So I thought, well, you know, people are going to be bidding on stuff. The committee thought, I didn't think. The committee thought, well, people are going to be bidding on stuff, and we've only got 6 items, so there's going to be all those other people wishing they could contribute. So instead of passing the seventh tradition on Sunday morning, we're going to pass it. We've got 2 people who are going to take it around after the live auction tonight. So that's what I wanted to remind you of. And the other thing, somebody asked me to ask people who were sponsors to try to make themselves available so people would know it. Another thing I want to mention is our outreach directory might help you with that. If you have no one that you feel will work for you for a sponsor, we have an outreach directory that's in the process of being updated, and you can get your name on that list or your information changed by going to the registration table and doing it. The other thing I want to mention is an old timer. Remember when Roseanne started this fellowship, they sponsored each other. They did the best they can. When we came into OA in St. Louis and one group and nobody doing anything, we sponsored the best we could with each other. So if you're from a group that is having a struggle and these are the people around you, for goodness sakes, be willing to sponsor them. Say yes. If somebody asks you, hey, could I call you? Would you sponsor me? Don't feel unworthy. If they've asked you that question, they see something in you that they believe could help them, and believe them. And say, yes, call me. You know, don't be judging ourselves so drastically that we think we can't do that reach out. So that's the end of my announcements.
Jane?
Yes.
4:30, we're closing. Literature.
Okay. Oh, 4:30? Before 5 o'clock? We don't have to get out of this room until 5. And the banquet's not till 6.
We want to put it away. Will we be in their way?
No, that'll stay up, so you can put it away. Okay. Okay, that'll be great. And then you can stay in and clean what you want.
Just before I walked in here, I was up in the room where the
Ways and Means
are. And they said, would you please remind the people to get in and finish their transaction, whatever they are.
I can't believe I forgot that. That Ways and Means room is crowded with wonderful little bargains. Go take yourself 5 or 10 tickets and put them in those cups and go home with something. Put your phone number on if you're not going to be here. I think they're going to close the cup raffle at 9 o'clock tonight. We also have on those tables in the corner silent auction items. Feel free to up the person who bid before you and pay a little more. And in the Ways and Means room, which is behind the registration, there's lots of other silent auction items. So bid something on it. Don't say, oh, that's too cheap to bid. Hey, nothing is too cheap. So, you know, bid something on it, take home a bargain, and don't feel guilty about it. I always like our little things because some people go home with bargains and don't matter if they pay the value.
Is this stuff here in this corner a continuation of
that? No, this is our live auction corner. There's 6 items that are going to be on the live auction. Everybody will be in here. It'll be after the speaker.
Okay.
Feel free to, we take checks. Feel free to bid big. Okay. What did we have? Another? Oh, thank you. 50-50. Yes, and then we'll close. We have a 50-50 raffle. You will get half of this crock of cash if you are the winning ticket. We're not going to pull it out until tomorrow after the grand closing. But with your phone number, we guarantee you we will call you and send you a check in the mail for your half of that big pot. The tickets are $2 each or 3 for $5. Or some people like me bought 3 in the beginning, and then I'm going to buy 3 at the end. So I'm on both ends of that process. So anyway, thanks for helping us. This is a fundraiser for Intergroup, so we appreciate it. And we're at our closing time. So see, you could have shared and avoided all those announcements. But let's do, I put my hand in yours. Are we all connected? Are we all connected? Okay. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works when we work it